35, walking through Swandam Lane on her way back to the station.
Well, not a pleasant neighbourhood for a lady.
No, no, indeed. Now, if you remember, Monday was an exceedingly hot day, and Mrs. St. Clair walked slowly, glancing about in the hope of seeing a cab. Then she heard a cry. She was struck cold to see her husband looking down at her, and, as it seemed to her, beckoning to her from a second-floor window. The window was open, and she distinctly saw his face, which she describes as being terribly agitated. He waved his hands frantically to her, and then vanished from the window so suddenly that it seemed to her that he'd been plucked back by some irresistible force from behind.
Extraordinary.
One singular point which struck her quick feminine eye was that although he wore some dark coat, such as he'd started to town in, he had on neither collar nor necktie. Convinced there was something amiss with him, she hurried down the steps, for the house was none other than the opium den in which you found me tonight, and running through the front room, she attempted to ascend the stairs which led to the second floor. At the foot of the stairs, however, she met that Lascar scoundrel, who thrust her back and pushed her out into the street. Filled with the most maddening doubts and fears, she rushed down the lane and, by rare good fortune, met in Fresno Street a number of constables with an inspector, all on their way to the beat. The inspector and two men accompanied her back, and in spite of the continued resistance of the proprietor, made their way to the room in which Mr. St. Clair had last been seen.
And?
Exactly what happened then, I would like you to hear from Mrs. St. Clair herself. We are almost at the house. Suffice it to say, at this stage, Neville St. Clair was nowhere to be seen. In fact, in the whole of that floor, there was no one to be found save a sinister cripple. His name is Hugh Boone, and his hideous face is one which is familiar to every man who goes much into the city. A professional beggar, and such a piteous spectacle that a small rain of charity descends into the greasy leather cap which lies upon the pavement beside him. His appearance, you see, is so remarkable that no one can pass without observing him. A shock of orange hair, a pale face disfigured by a horrible scar which, by its contraction, has turned up the outer edge of his upper lip, a bulldog chin and a pair of very penetrating dark eyes which present a singular contrast to the colour of his hair, all mark him out from amid the common crowd of mendicants. So, too, does his wit, for he's ever ready with a reply to any piece of chaff which may be thrown at him by the passers-by. This is the man whom we now learn to have been the lodger at the opium den and to have been the last man to see the gentleman of whom we are in quest. Ah, here we are, the Cedars. Yes, and we're expected. There's still a light on.
So what did this cripple have to say for himself?
Both he and the Lascar stoutly swore that no one else had been in the front room during the afternoon.
Obviously lying.
Quite possibly. Especially as traces of blood were to be seen on the windowsill and several scattered drops were visible upon the wooden floor of the bedroom. For the moment, Watson, just let me give you this thought.
Well, there.
There is only one entrance to that house in Swandam Lane, and all the back windows look directly onto the river, which was at its height at the time. When the mud was revealed once more, however, the police inspector found not Mr. Neville St. Clair, but a coat identified as belonging to him. And do you know why that coat had not been dragged away by the fierce currents of an ebbing tide, Watson?
Weighted in some way?
Every pocket had been stuffed with coppers. 421 pennies and 270 halfpennies. We must assume that the body, being less encumbered, was sucked away into the river. Ah, the groom will take care of our horse. Shall we go in?
Mrs. St. Clair, may I present my colleague, Dr. Watson?
I'm delighted to see you.
Madam?
You will, I'm sure, forgive anything that may be wanting in our arrangements when you consider the blow which has come so suddenly upon us.
My dear madam, I am no campaigner. And if I were not, I can very well see that no apology is needed.
Please, gentlemen, do take a seat.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I should very much like to ask you one or two plain questions to which I beg that you will give a plain answer.
Certainly, madam.
Do not trouble about my feelings. I am not hysterical, nor given to fainting. I simply wish to hear your real, real opinion.
Upon what point?
In your heart of hearts, do you think Neville is alive? Frankly, now.
Frankly, I do not.
You think that he is dead?
I do.
Murdered?
I don't say that.